Osho, The Book of Wisdom, Volume 1, Discourses on Atisha's 7 Points of Mind Training, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse Number 1.
Bhagwan. First, learn the preliminaries. Think that all phenomena are like dreams. Examine the nature of unborn awareness. Let even the remedy itself go free on its own. Settle in the nature of basic cognition, the essence. Between sessions, consider phenomena as phantoms. Train in joining, sending and taking together. Do this by riding the breath. Three objects, three poisons, three bases of virtue. Train with phrases in every mode of behavior.
Religion is not a science, and yet a science. Religion is not a science in the sense physics, mathematics, chemistry are sciences, but still it is a science because it is the ultimate knowing. The word science means knowing. Then if religion is not a science, what else can be? It is the highest knowing. It is the purest knowing. The ordinary science is knowledge, not knowing. Religion is knowing itself. The ordinary science is object-oriented. It knows something, hence it is a knowledge. Religion is not object-oriented. It has no object. It knows nothing. Knowing knows itself as if the mirror is reflecting itself. It is utterly pure of all content. Hence, religion is not a knowledge but a knowing. Science is a lower kind of knowing, religion a higher kind. Religion is philosophia ultima, the ultimate knowing. The difference between the two is not of the spirit. The spirit is the same. But the difference is certainly of purity. Science is mixed with much mud. Religion is pure essence, pure fragrance. The mud has disappeared. The lotus has appeared. And at the ultimate stage, even the lotus has disappeared, only the fragrance abides. These are the three stages of knowing: the mud, the lotus, and the fragrance. Religion cannot be grasped, because there is no object in it. but still it can be understood. It cannot be explained, but it can be experienced. There is no way of informing you about religion. Because it cannot be reduced to information, but you can be showed the way, the path to it. Fingers pointing to the moon. The fingers are not the moon, obviously. But the fingers can point to the moon. These 7 points of mind training of the great master Atisha are fingers, 7 fingers pointing to the moon. Don't be caught in the fingers. Don't become too much obsessed with the fingers. That is not the point. That will be missing the point. Use the fingers and forget them and look where the fingers are pointing at. And when you will see the moon, who bothers about the fingers? Who remembers them? They become automatically non-essential. They disappear. That's why those who have experienced religion, all the scriptures for them become utterly useless. All methods become non-essential. When the goal is achieved, the path is forgotten. Atisha is one of the rare masters, rare in the sense that he was taught by 3 enlightened masters. It has never happened before and never since. To be a disciple of 3 enlightened masters is simply unbelievable. Because 1 enlightened master is enough. But this story that he was taught by 3 enlightened masters has a very metaphorical significance also. It is true, it is historical too. The 3 masters that Atisha remained with for many years were, first, Dharmakirti, a great Buddhist mystic. He taught him no mind. He taught him emptiness. He taught him how to be thoughtless. He taught him how to drop all content from the mind and be contentless. The 2nd master was Dharmarakshita, another Buddhist mystic. He taught him love, compassion. And the 3rd master was Yogin Maitreya, another Buddhist mystic. He taught him the art of taking the suffering of others and absorbing it into your own heart. Love in action. It happened, it could happen, because all these three masters were great friends. They had started their search together. While they were on the way, they had remained together. When they attained, still they were together. Atisa became a disciple of Dharmakirti. Dharmakirti said to him, I will teach you the first principle. And for the second, you go to Dharmarakshita. And for the third, to Yogin Maitreya. This way, you will know all the three phases of ultimate reality, the three faces of God, the Trinity, the Trimurti. And this way, you will learn each face from the person who is the most perfect in it. These are the three ways people reach to the ultimate. If you reach from emptiness, you attain the other two also. But your path remains basically that of emptiness. You know more about emptiness. And whatsoever you teach, emptiness will be emphasized in it. That's how it happened in Buddha's case. He had attained through emptiness. Hence his whole teaching became emptiness oriented. There is no God in Buddha's teaching. Because God is a thought, a content, an object. God is the other. And Buddha had attained by dropping the other. Buddha had attained by emptying his mind totally. Hence there is no place for God. No place for anything at all. His path is the purest via negativa. That was also the case with Dharmakirti. He was the perfect master about emptiness. A master par excellence about emptiness. And when Atisa has learned how to be empty, he said, the master said, it will be better for the next step. You go to Dharmarakshita. Because he has attained from a totally different path. Just as you can reach to the Everest from different sides. He has reached from a totally different path, the path of compassion. I can teach you also the path of compassion, but my knowing about the path is only knowing about the path from the top. I have reached through the path of emptiness. Once you reach at the top, you can look on all the paths. They are all available to your vision. But to follow a path in its different dimensions, to follow a path in all its details, small details is a totally different thing. And to look at from a helicopter or from the top is certainly a different vision. It is a bird's eye view. And Dharmakirti says, if there was nobody available here, I would have taught you the other two. But when a man like Dharma Rakshita is just here, my neighbors, living in another cave just by the side, it is better you go to him. First, one has to become empty, utterly empty. But one has not to become a clinger with emptiness. Otherwise, your life will never know the positive expression of religion. Your life will miss the poetry, the joy of sharing. You will remain empty. You will have a kind of freedom. But your freedom will be only freedom from. It will not be freedom for. And unless a freedom is both freedom from and freedom for, something is missing. Something is lacking. Your freedom will be poor. Just to be free from is a poor kind of freedom. The real freedom starts only when you are free for. You can sing a song, and you can dance a dance, and you can celebrate, and you can start overflowing. That's what compassion is. Man lives in passion. When the mind disappears, passion is transformed into compassion. Passion means you are a beggar with a begging bowl. You are asking and asking for more and more from everybody. You are exploiting others. Your relationships are nothing but exploitations. Cunning devices to possess the other. Very clever strategies to dominate. When you are living in mind, in passion, your whole life is a power politics. Even your love, even your social service, even your humanitarian works are nothing but power politics. Deep down there is a desire to be powerful over others. The same energy, when mind is dropped, becomes compassion. And it takes a totally new turn. It is no more begging. You become an emperor. You start giving. Now you have. You had it always. But because of the mind, you were not aware of it. The mind was functioning like a darkness around you. And you were unaware of the light within. The mind was creating an illusion of being a beggar, while all the time you had been an emperor. The mind was creating a dream. In reality, you had never needed anything. All is already given. All that you need, all that you can need, is already the case. God is within you. But because of the mind means dreaming. desiring. You never look within. You go on rushing outwards. You keep yourself at the back. Your eyes are turned towards the without. They have become focused. That's what mind is all about. Focusing of the eyes on the without. And one has to learn how to unfocus them from there. How to make them loose, less rigid, more liquid, so that they can turn inwards. Once you have seen who you are, the beggar disappears. In fact, it had never existed. It was just a dream, an idea. Mind is creating all your misery. Mind gone, misery is gone. And suddenly you are full of energy. And the energy needs expression, sharing. It wants to become a song, a dance, a celebration. That is compassion. You start sharing. Atisa learned compassion from Dharma Rakshita. But compassion has two phases. One is inactive compassion. The meditator sits silently in his cave, showering his compassion over the whole existence. But it is a very inactive kind of compassion. You have to go to him to partake of it. He will not come to you. You will have to go to the mountains, to his cave, to share his joy. He will not come to you. He will not move in any way. He will not take any active step. He will not flow towards others. He will not seek and search the people with whom he can share his dance. He will wait. This is a feminine kind of compassion, just like the woman waits. She never takes the initiative. She never goes to the man. She may love the man, but she will never say it first that I love you. She will wait. She will hope that one day or other, sooner or later, the man will propose. Woman is inactive love, passive love. Man is active love. Man takes the initiative. And in the same way, compassion has two possibilities, the feminine and the masculine. From Dharma Rakshita, Atisa learned the feminine art of being in love with existence. One more step is needed. Dharma Rakshita told him, you go to Yogin Maitreya. These three masters were all living together in the same vicinity. You go to Yogin Maitreya and learn how to transform the passive energy into active energy. So love becomes active. And once love is active, compassion is active, you have passed all the three dimensions of truth. You have known all. You have known utter emptiness. You have known compassion arising, you have known compassion showering. Life is fulfilled only when all these three have happened. Because Atisha learnt under three enlightened masters, he is called Atisha, the thrice great. Nothing more is known about his ordinary life, when and where exactly he was born. He existed somewhere in the 11th century. He was born in India. But the moment his love became active, he started moving towards Tibet. As if a great magnet was pulling him towards Tibet. In the Himalayas he attained. Then he never came back to India. He moved towards Tibet. His love soured on Tibet. He transformed the whole quality of Tibetan consciousness. He was a miracle worker. Whatsoever he touched was transformed into gold. One of the greatest alchemists the world has ever known. These 7 points of mind training is his fundamental teaching that he gave to Tibet, a gift from India to Tibet. India has given great gifts to the world. Atisha is one of those great gifts. Just as India gave Bodhidharma to China, India gave Atisha to Tibet. Tibet is infinitely indebted to this man. These 7 points, a smallest treatise you can find, are of immense value. You will have to meditate over each statement. They are the whole religion condensed. You will have to unfold each statement. They are like seeds. They contain much. It may not be apparently so, but the moment you move into these statements deeply, you contemplate and meditate, and you start experimenting with them, you will be surprised. You will be going into the greatest adventure of your life. The first, learn the preliminaries. What are the preliminaries? Three are the preliminaries. First, truth is not something to be created. Truth is not something that is far away. Truth is here, now. Truth surrounds you, like the ocean surrounds the fish. The fish may not be aware. Once the fish becomes aware of the ocean, the fish is enlightened. The fish is not aware, cannot be aware. Because the fish is born in the ocean, has always lived in the ocean, is part of the ocean as any wave is part of the ocean. The fish is also a wave, a little more solid, but born out of the ocean, lives in the ocean, one day disappears in the ocean. The fish may never come to know about the ocean. To know something, a little distance is needed. To know something, perspective is needed. And the ocean is so close, that's why the fish may not be aware of it. And so is the case with truth. Or if you like the word God, you can use the word God. So is the case with God. It is not that he is far away, that's why we don't know about him. It is because he is not far away, but very close by. Even to say that he is close by is not right, because you are it. He is within you and without you. He is all and all. This is the first thing that has to be allowed to sink deep in your heart. Truth already is. We are in it. This is the most fundamental thing to begin with. You are not to discover it. It is not covers. All that is needed is a new kind of awareness which is missing in you. Truth is there, but you are not aware, you are not mindful, you are not alert. You don't know how to watch. You don't know how to observe. You don't know how to look and see. You have eyes, but still you are blind. You have ears, but you are deaf. The first preliminary is truth is. The second preliminary is mind is the barrier. Nothing else is hindering you from truth. Just your own mind. Mind surrounds you like a film, like a movie that goes on, and you remain engrossed in it, fascinated by it. It is a fantasy that surrounds you, a continuous story that goes on. And because you are so much fascinated by it, you go on missing that which is. And mind is not, it is only a fantasy. It is only a faculty to dream. Mind is nothing but dreams and dreams. Dreams of the past, dreams of the future, dreams of how things should be, dreams of great ambitions, achievements, dreams and desires, that is the stuff mind is made of. But it surrounds you like a china wall. And because of it, the fish remains unaware of the ocean. So the second preliminary is, mind is the only barrier. And the third, no mind is the door. Atisa calls no mind, bodhicitta. That is his word for no mind. It can be translated as Buddha mind too, Buddha consciousness too, or if you like, you can call it Christ consciousness, Krishna consciousness. It doesn't make any difference what name is used. But the basic quality of bodhicitta is that it is a no mind. It looks paradoxical. Mind in the state of no mind. But the meaning is very clear. Mind without content. Mind without thoughts is what is meant, is what is indicated. Remember the word bodhicitta, because Atisa says the whole effort of religion, the whole science of religion is nothing but an endeavor to create bodhicitta, Buddha consciousness. A mind which functions as a no mind. A mind which dreams no more, thinks no more. A mind which is just awareness, pure awareness. These are the three preliminaries. The second sutra, think that all phenomena are like dreams. Now the work starts. Atisa is very condensed, seed-like. That is the meaning of a sutra. Just a thread, just a hint, and then you have to decode it. Think that all phenomena are like dreams. Phenomena means all that you see, all that you experience, all that can ever be experienced is all phenomena. Remember, the objects of the world are not only phenomena and dreams. Objects of consciousness, they may be objects of the world, they may be just objects in the mind. They may be great spiritual experiences. You may see Kundalini rising in you. That too is phenomena. A beautiful dream, a very sweet dream, but it is a dream all the same. You may see great light flooding your being, but that light is also phenomena. You may see lotuses blooming inside you, and a great fragrance arising within your being. That too is phenomena, because you are always the seer and never the seen, always the experiencer and never the experienced, always the witness and never the witnessed. All that can be witnessed, seen, observed is phenomena. Material phenomena, psychological phenomena, spiritual phenomena, but they are all the same. There is no need to make any distinction. The basic thing to remember is that which can be seen is a dream. Think that all phenomena are dreams. This is a tremendously powerful technique. If you start contemplating in this way, you are walking on the street and you contemplate people passing by are all dreams. The shops, and the shopkeepers and the customers and the people coming and going, all our dreams, the houses, the buses, the train, the aeroplane, all our dreams. You will be immediately surprised by something of tremendous import happening within you. The moment you think all our dreams, suddenly, like a flash, one thing comes into your vision, I am too a dream. Because if the scene is dream, then who is this I? If the object is a dream, then the subject is also a dream. If the object is false, how the subject can be the truth? Impossible. If you watch everything as dream, suddenly you will find something is slipping out of your being, the idea of the ego. This is the only way to drop the ego, and the simplest. Just try it. Meditate this way. Meditating this way again and again, one day the miracle happens. You look in and the ego is not found there. Ego is a byproduct. Byproduct of the illusion that whatsoever you are seeing is true. If you think that the objects are true, then the ego can exist. It is a byproduct. If you think that the objects are dreams, the ego disappears. And if you think continuously that all is a dream, one day, in a dream in the night, you will be surprised. Suddenly in the dream you will remember that this is a dream too. And immediately, as the remembrance happens, the dream will disappear. And for the first time you will experience yourself deep asleep yet awake. A very paradoxical experience, but of great benefit. Once you have seen your dream disappearing because you have become aware of the dream, your quality of consciousness will have a new flavor to it. Next day in the morning, you will wake up with a totally different quality you had never known before. You will wake up for the first time. Now you will know all those other mornings were false. You were not really awake. The dreams had continued. The only difference was in the night you dream with eyes closed, in the day you dream with eyes open. But if the dream has disappeared because awareness happened, suddenly you became aware in the dream. And remember, awareness and dreaming cannot exist together. Here awareness arises and there the dream disappears. When you become awake in sleep, the next morning is going to be of something so important that it is incomparable. Nothing like it has ever happened. Your eyes will be so clear, so transparent, and everything will look so psychedelic, so colorful, so alive, even rocks will be felt as if breathing, pulsating. Even rocks will have a heartbeat. When you are awake, the whole existence changes its quality. We are living in dream. We are asleep, even when we think we are awake. Think that all phenomena are like dreams. First, objects will lose their objectivity, and second, the subject will lose its subjectivity. And that brings you to a transcendence. The object is no more important, the subject is no more important. Then what is left? A transcendental consciousness, bodhicitta, just a witnessing, with no idea of I and thou. Just a pure mirror, which reflects that which is. And God is nothing but that which is. The third sutra, examine the nature of unborn awareness. Now, you know what awareness is. You have known this transcendental awareness, where objects and subjects are no more existential. You have known for the first time this purity, this crystal clear mirror. Now examine the nature of this awareness. Look into it. Look deep into it. Shake yourself into as full alertness as possible. Wake up and see. And you will start laughing. Because now you will see there has never been a birth and there is going to be never a death. This is unborn and undying consciousness. It has always been here. It is eternal. It is timeless. And how much afraid you were of death. And how much afraid you were of old age. And how much afraid you were of thousand and one things. And nothing has ever happened. All was a dream. Seeing this, one smiles, laughs. The whole life up to now has been ridiculous. Absurd. You were unnecessarily afraid, unnecessarily greedy, unnecessarily suffering. You were living in a nightmare, and it was your own creation. Examine the nature of unborn awareness. And you are freed from all misery, all suffering, all hell. Let even the remedy itself go free on its own. And now, don't start clinging to the remedy, to the methods. That temptation arises. That is the last temptation. That is the very last effort of the mind to survive. The mind comes from a back door once more. It tries. Before it disappears forever, it makes one effort more. And that effort is to cling to the methods. The method of thinking that all phenomena is a dream. It has given you such joy, such deep experience of reality. Naturally, you would like to cling to it. And once you cling, again you are back into the same old rut. The mind is back in disguise. Cling to anything and the mind is back, because clinging is mind. Hold to anything, depend on anything, and mind is back, because mind is dependence, is slavery. Possess anything, even the spiritual method, even the method of meditation, become a possessor, and you are possessed by it. Whether you possess money, or you possess a tremendously significant method of meditation, it doesn't matter. Whatsoever you possess, you will be possessed by it. And you will be afraid to lose it. Once a Sufi mystic was brought to me. For 30 years continuously, he has used a Sufi method of jikr. And he has attained to great experiences. One can see it. Even ordinary people were aware that he was living in a totally different world. You could see in his eyes, they were shining with joy. His very being had a vibe of the beyond. His disciples brought him to me and they said, "Our master is a realized soul. What do you say about our master?" I said, "Leave your master with me for 3 days. And then come back." The master stayed with me for 3 days. The third day he was very angry. And he said, "You have destroyed my 30 years' work." Because I told him a simple thing. Just this sutra of Atisa, let even the remedy itself go. I told him, now 30 years you have been remembering one thing, that all is divine. The tree is God, the rock is God, the people are God, the dog is God, everything is God. For 30 years you have been remembering continuously. And he had made really a sincere effort. He said, "Yes." I said, "Now you stop remembering. How long you are going to remember? If it has happened, stop remembering and let us see what happens. If it has really happened, even dropping remembering, it will remain." It was so logical that he agreed. He said, "It has happened." I said, "Then give it a try. For 3 days you forget remembering. You stop remembering." He said, "I cannot stop. It has become automatic." I said, "You just wait, you try." It took him for at least 2 days, 48 hours, to stop. It was hard to stop. It has become automatic. There was no need to remember. For 30 years he was remembering. It was simply there, like an undercurrent. But within 48 hours, it stopped. And the third day morning, he was very angry. He said, "What you have done? All that joy has disappeared. I am feeling myself very ordinary. I am feeling myself the same as I was before I started on the journey 30 years before." He started crying out of anger and out of sadness. Tears started coming to his eyes. He said, "Give me back my method. Please don't take it." I said, "Just look. If this is so much dependent on the method, then nothing has happened. It is just an illusion that you are creating by continuous remembering. This is nothing but auto-hypnosis. all the great masters say this, that one day you have to drop the method. And the sooner you drop, the better. The moment you attain, the moment awareness is released in you, immediately drop the mat. Just see, this is only the fourth sutra. In the third sutra, Atisa says, examine the nature of unborn awareness. And in the fourth, immediately let even the remedy itself go. Now no more examination, no more mindfulness, no more remembering that all is dream. Once the first taste on your tongue has happened of awareness, be quick, because mind is very cunning. Mind can start telling you, look, you are no more ordinary, you are extraordinary. Look, you have attained. Look, you have become a Buddha. You are enlightened. Look, this is the goal of all human beings, and very rarely one in a million attains, and you are that one in a million. And the mind will say all these beautiful, sweet nothings. And of course, the ego can come back. You can start feeling very good, holier than thou. You can start feeling special, spiritual, saintly, and all is lost. Throw the remedy, the disease is back. Cling to the remedy, and the disease is back. One has to be very alert in dropping the method. Once you attain something, immediately drop the method. Otherwise, your mind will start clinging to the method. It will talk very logically to you that this is the method that is important. Buddha used to say again and again a story. 5 idiots passed through a village. People were surprised seeing them, because they were carrying a boat on their heads. The boat was really big. It was almost crushing them, those 5 idiots. They were almost dying under the weight of it. And people asked, what are you doing? They said, we cannot leave this boat. This is the boat that helped us to come from the other shore to this shore. How can we leave it? It is because of it that we have been able to come here. Without it, we would have died on the other shore. And the night was coming close. And there are wild animals on the other shore. It was as sure as anything that by the morning we would have been dead. We will never leave this boat. We are indebted forever. We will carry it on our heads in sheer gratitude. This can happen because all minds are idiots. Mind as such is idiotic. The origin of the word idiot is beautiful to remember. Idiocy means something private, something special, something that is your own, something eccentric. That is the basic meaning of idiocy. To function in an eccentric way. Mind always functions in an eccentric way. Mind is always an idiot. the really intelligent person has no mind. Intelligence arises out of no mind. Idiocy out of mind. Mind is idiotic, no mind is wise. No mind is wisdom, intelligence. Mind depends on knowledge, on method, on money, on experience, on this, on that. Mind always needs props. It needs supports. It cannot exist on its own. On its own, it flops. So the ultimate effort of the mind to come back will be when you will attain to some awareness. It will say, look, so we have arrived. The moment something inside you says, we have arrived, beware. Be very, very cautious now. Each step has to be of great caution. Let even the remedy itself go free on its own. Please, now, don't cling to the remedy, to the method. This is the emphasis of Jai Krishnamurti. But this is his first sutra. This should be the fourth. That's where he is wrong. It cannot be the first sutra. How can you drop a method that you have never used? You can drop only a method that you have used. Atisa is far more logical, far more scientific than Jai Krishnamurti. And I can understand why he emphasizes. Because he is afraid that if you go into three sutras, the fourth may never arrive. You may be last in the three. Many are last in the preliminaries. Many are last in the methods. So he has become too cautious. Extremely cautious. Those five idiots were carrying the boat and Jai Krishnamurti is teaching on the other shore to people, don't enter in the boat. Two kasas. Because if you enter in the boat, who knows? You may start carrying the boat on the head. So please don't enter. And there are many who have become afraid of entering in the boat. But to be afraid of entering in the boat is the same idioticness. There is no difference. One who is afraid of entering the boat is the same person who will carry the boat. Otherwise, why should you be afraid? There are old friends of mine who have followed Jai Krishnamurti for their whole life. They come to me and they say, we would like to come here, but we are afraid of all the methods that you teach. Methods are dangerous, they say. Methods are dangerous only if you are unaware. Otherwise, they can be used beautifully. Do you think a boat is dangerous? It is dangerous if you are thinking to carry it on your head for your whole life, out of sheer gratitude. Otherwise, it is just a raft to be used and discarded. All methods are rafts to be used and discarded. Used and abandoned. Used and never to be looked back again. There is no need, no point. These are two extremes. One extreme is those five idiots, and the other extreme is the followers of Jai Krishnamurti. There is no need to be either. My approach is, use the boat, use beautiful boats, use as many boats as possible. With this awareness that when the shore is reached, the boat is abandoned. With no clinging. While you are in the boat, enjoy it. Be thankful to it. When you get out of the boat, say thank you and move on. Fifth sutra, settle in the nature of basic cognition, the essence. If you drop the remedy, automatically you will start settling into your being. Mind is clinging. It never allows you to settle in your being. It keeps you interested into something that you are not. The boats. When you don't cling to anything, there is nowhere to go. All boats have been abandoned. You cannot go anywhere. All paths have been dropped. You cannot go anywhere. All dreams and desires have disappeared. There is no way to move. Relaxation happens on its own accord. Just think of the word relax. Be. Settle. You have come home. Settle in the nature of basic cognition, the essence. And when you settle, there is pure awareness with no effort, with no method. If awareness needs method, it is still not true awareness, not the essential awareness, not the natural spontaneous awareness. It is still a byproduct of the method. It is cultivated, created. It is a byproduct of the mind. It is not yet the truth. Settle now in the nature of basic cognition, the essence. Now there is nothing to do. See, be, enjoy. Only this moment exists. This now, this here, this cawing of the crows, and all is silence. To know this serenity is to know who you are, what this existence is all about. This is samadhi. In the words of Patanjali, this is sambodhi. In the words of Gautam Buddha, this is bodhicitta. In the words of Atisa, between sessions, consider phenomena as phantoms. Now, Atisa is really very alert of the disciple. He knows that these experiences of settling into your being will be only momentary in the beginning. One moment, you will find yourself relaxed into your being. Another moment, it is gone. In the beginning it is bound to be so. One moment you are flooded with the unknown, with the mysterious. Another moment it is no more there. One moment all the fragrance, and the other moment you are searching for it and you cannot find it, where it has gone. Only glimpses will happen in the beginning. Slowly, slowly, they become more and more solid, the more and more abide. Slowly, 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 very slowly, they settle forever. Before that, you cannot be allowed to take it for granted. That will be a mistake. Hence he says, between sessions, when you are sitting in meditation, a session of meditation, this will happen. But it will go. So what you are supposed to do between sessions, between sessions consider phenomena as phantoms. Between sessions continue to use the method. Drop the method. When you are deep in meditation and the moment comes, when awareness is getting purer and purer and purer, and suddenly it is utterly pure, drop the method, abandon the method, forget all about the remedy. Just settle and be. But this will happen only for moments in the beginning. Sometimes it happens here listening to me. Just for a moment, like a breeze, you are transported into another world, the world of no mind. Just for a moment, you know that you know, but only for a moment. And again, the darkness gathers. The mind is back with all its dreams, with all its desires, and all its stupidities. For a moment, the clouds had separated, and you had seen the sun. Now again, the clouds are there. It is all dark, and the sun has disappeared. Now, even to believe that the sun exists will be difficult. Now to believe that what you had experienced a moment before was true will be difficult. It may have been a fantasy. The mind may say it may have been just imagination. It is so incredible. It looks so impossible that it had happened to you. With all this stupidity in the mind, with all these clouds and darknesses, it had happened to you. You had seen the sun for a moment. It doesn't look probable. You may have imagined. Maybe you had fallen in a dream and seen it. Between the sessions, start again. Be on the boat. Use the boat again. Consider phenomena as phantoms. Atisa is very considerate of the disciples. Otherwise, the fourth sutra would have been the last, or at the most the fifth. Settle in the nature of basic cognition, the essence. If Atisa was a man like Bodhidharma, the treatise was finished on the fifth sutra, or even on the fourth, let even the remedy itself go free of its own. Then the settling happens on its own. Bodhidharma was very miserly. He would not have used the fifth. But Atisa is very considerate of the disciple. He had been a disciple, so he knows the difficulties of a disciple. And he had been a disciple of three great masters, so he knows all the difficulties that a disciple has to face. He has been a pilgrim. He knows all the problems. And he has been a pilgrim on three paths. All the three possible paths. So he knows all the problems and all the difficulties and all the pitfalls and all the obstacles that are bound to arise on the path of a disciple. Hence his considerateness. He says between sessions, between these moments of meditativeness, between these moments of utter joy, emptiness, purity, between these moments of being, remember that all are dreams, that every phenomena is a phantom. Go on using that method till the settling has happened forever. Train in joining, sending and taking together. Do this by riding the breath. Now, emptiness has been experienced. This is what he had learned up to this sutra. He had been with the first master, Dharmakirti. With this sutra, the second master, Dharmarakshita. Train in joining, sending and taking together. Do this by riding the breath. Now he says, start being compassionate. And the method is, when you breathe in, listen carefully. It is one of the greatest methods. When you breathe in, think you are breathing all the miseries of all the people in the world. All the darkness, all the negativity, all the hell that exists anywhere, you are breathing it in. And let it absorb, let it be absorbed in your heart. You may have read or heard about so-called positive thinkers of the West. They say just the opposite. They don't know what they are saying. They say when you breathe out, throw all the misery and negativity. And when you breathe in joy, positivity, happiness, cheerfulness. Atisa's method is just the opposite. When you breathe in all the misery and suffering of all the beings of the world, past, present, future. And when you breathe out all the joy that you have, all the blissfulness that you have, all the benediction that you have. Breathe out, pour yourself into existence. This is the method of compassion. Drink in all the suffering and pour out all the blessings. And you will be surprised if you do it. The moment you take all the sufferings of the world inside you, there are no more sufferings. The heart immediately transforms the energy. The heart is a transforming force. Drink the misery in, and it is transformed into blissfulness. Then pour it out. Once you have learned it, that your heart can do this magic, this miracle, you would like to do it again and again. You try it. It is one of the most practical methods. Simple. and brings immediate results. You do it today and you see. That is one of the approaches of Buddha and all his disciples. Atisa is one of his disciples. In the same tradition, in the same line. Buddha says again and again to his disciples, "Ihi passiko, come and see." They are very scientific people. Buddhism is the most scientific religion on the earth. Hence, in the world, Buddhism is gaining more and more ground every day. The more the world will become intelligent, more and more Buddha will become important. It is bound to be so. The more and more people will know about science, Buddha will have great appeal. Because he will convince the scientific mind. Because he says, whatsoever I am saying can be practiced. And I don't say to you, believe it. I say, experiment with it, experience it. And only then, if you feel yourself, trust it. Otherwise, there is no need to believe. Try this beautiful method of compassion. Take in all the misery and pour out all the joy. Train in joining, sending and taking together. Do this by riding the breath. Three objects, three poisons, three bases of virtue. There are three objects which can function either as three poisons or can become three bases of infinite virtue. Atisa is talking of the inner alchemy. The poison can become the nectar. The baser metal can be transformed into gold. What are these three objects? First is aversion. Second is attachment. And third is indifference. This is how the mind functions. You feel aversion to whatsoever you dislike. You feel attachment to whatsoever you like. And you feel indifferent to things which you neither dislike nor like. These are the three objects. Between these three, the mind exists. These are the three legs of the tripod of called mind. Aversion, attachment, indifference. And if you live in these three as they are, you are living in poison. This is how we have created the hell out of life. Aversion, dislike, hatred, repulsion, that creates one third of your hell. And attachment, liking, clinging, possessiveness, that creates second one third of your hell. And indifference to all that you are neither attracted nor repulsed. That creates the third part, the third one third of your hell. Just watch your mind. This is how your mind functions. It is always saying, I like this, I don't like that. And I am indifferent to the third. These are the three ways the mind goes on moving. This is the rut, the routine. Atisa says, These are the three passions, but they can become the three bases of virtue. How they can become three bases of great virtue? If you bring the quality of compassion, if you learn the art of absorbing suffering in, as if it is coming riding on the breath, all the suffering of the world, then how can you be repulsed? How can you dislike anything? And how can you be indifferent to anything? And how can you be attached to anything if you are taking unconditionally all the suffering of the world, drinking it, absorbing it in your heart, and then pouring instead of it blessings to the whole existence unconditionally, not to somebody in particular, remember, not only to man, but to all. To all the beings, trees and rocks and birds and animals, to the whole existence, material, immaterial. When you are pouring the blessings unconditionally, how can you be attached? Attachment, aversion, indifference all disappear with this small technique. And with their difference, the poison is transformed into nectar. And the bondage becomes freedom. And the hell is no more hell, it is heaven. In these moments, you come to know this very body, the Buddha. This very earth, the lotus paradise. And the last sutra, train with phrases in every mode of behavior. Atisa is not an escapist. He does not teach escapism. He does not tell you to move from situations which are not of your liking. He says you have to learn functioning in bodhicitta, in Buddha consciousness, in all kinds of situations, in the marketplace, in the monastery, with people, in the crowd, or alone in the cave, with friends, with enemies, with family, familiar people, with strangers, with men, with animals. In all kinds of situations, in all kinds of challenges, you have to learn to function in compassion, in meditation. Because all these experiences of different situations will make your bodhicitta more and more ripe. Don't escape from any situation. If you escape, then something will remain missing in you. Then your bodhicitta will not be that much ripe, will not be that much rich. Live life in its multidimensionality, and that's what I teach to you too. Live life in its totality. And living in the world, don't be of it. Live in the world like a lotus flower in water. It lives in water, but the water touches it not. Then only bodhicitta will flower in you, will bloom in you. Then only you will come to know the ultimate consciousness, which is freedom, which is joy, eternal joy, and which is benediction. Not to know it is to miss the whole point of life. To know it is the only goal, the only goal. Remember it. And remember, Atisa's sutras are not philosophical, not speculative, not abstract. They are experimental. They are scientific. Let me repeat again. Religion is a science in the sense that it is the purest knowing. Yet it is not a science in the sense of chemistry and physics. It is not the science of the outward, it is the science of the inward. It is not the science of the exterior, it is the science of the interior. It is the science that takes you beyond. It is the science that takes you into the unknown and the unknowable. It is the greatest adventure there is. It is a call and a challenge to all those who have any courage, any guts, any intelligence. Religion is not for cowards. It is for people who want to live dangerously. Enough for today.